Actually, it's good times.
It's about 4.8%. At least that's the official unemployment rate. And that is very, very good relative to the unemployment rates we have seen over the last 8 years.
But our new president wants to find jobs, 25 million of them.
My administration's policies and regulatory reform, tax reform, trade policies will return significant manufacturing jobs to our country. Everything's going to be based on bringing our jobs back, the good jobs, the real jobs.
And former Labor Secretary Robert Reich says there is a crazy numbers game trying to figure out the real unemployment rate in this economy. You can hear it in this exchange between Sean Spicer and a reporter at a briefing last month. What is the overall unemployment rate?
What's the overall unemployment rate?
Are you talking about whether or not we include the full?
I'm just asking you.
I mean, the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts it out. It's not a question of what I accept. I mean, there are ways that you can put out full employment.
I know the difference.
Right, but I'm saying that so there's a reason that we put out several versions of that.
Right.
Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick spoke to Robert Reich, who is anxious to know if the Trump administration is serious about going places to find jobs other administrations have feared to tread.
To be charitable to Sean Spicer, he's right. There is a lot of unemployment in terms of people who are not even in the labor force looking for work. The labor force, it's called the participation rate. It stands today at about 62.9%. That is, 62.9% of the eligible workforce is in work, and that's pretty low. So a lot of people have, for one reason or another, opted out of even looking for work. It may be because they don't have the skills, and they are so far away from having the skills that they don't even bother. Or it may be that geographically they're very far away from where the jobs are and they can't really move very easily. And that certainly is a trap that some Americans find themselves in. Some of that has to do with people who are moving toward retirement. And the baby boomers, a very, very large group, obviously, they are in retirement or moving toward retirement very quickly. And some of them are reflected in that 62.9% labor participation rate. The less charitable view is that the White House would like to set the bar fairly low, or at least not nearly where it is today, in terms of showing progress over the next 2 or 4 or even conceivably 8 years. That's hard to do when you have an official unemployment rate of 4.8%. It's not going to get much lower than that.
It seems like regardless of which of these measures we take, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which you used to run it, has several different measures, but it seems like the point is the change over time, regardless of how you're measuring it. Compare 2016 to 2019 when you get there and see how the curve has changed when you're measuring consistently.
Exactly. And that's the true of almost all economic measures. You really only find them valuable in the context of what happened before. Are things getting better or are things getting worse?
Well, one of the things that you mentioned in there, Secretary Reich, was places, especially small towns in rural America, where the jobs may have left or people aren't living close to jobs anymore. And this employment crisis in rural places seems to be one of the key factors here that's still under-discussed in this debate about unemployment in the United States. Not that jobs aren't around, but jobs have moved, manufacturing jobs have moved or left, and that the jobs that do exist have sort of pushed out to the edges.
And that is it's a large problem. You're right, it's not discussed very much. In rural America, many areas of America that used to have a lot of what we used to call Rust Belt industries, big manufacturing. As those have declined, you find both in rural and in these kinds of urban areas a lot of structural unemployment. People can't very easily move to where the new jobs are, in part because the value of their homes, if they own their homes, has declined relative to the value of homes in regions of the country where there are a huge number of jobs and the demand is very high. And because the demand is high, home values, housing costs are much, much higher. That's kind of a deeper and larger problem in the United States because we're seeing much more concentration of economic activity and wealth, and also much more concentration in other places of economic inactivity and poverty.
President Trump benefits from a 4.8% unemployment rate and a slow recovery, But structural changes in the U.S. economy are what the president needs to worry about, according to Robert Reich, former labor secretary under Bill Clinton. Investing in temporary projects making steel pipelines or putting coal miners back to work are not programs that create permanent, high-paying work. In a conversation with The Takeaway's Todd Zwillick, Reich says Trump can rant about globalization and losing jobs to foreign competition all he wants, but he says workers can't compete against automation and the new robots coming online.
Technology inside American companies, located in the United States, has led to a huge and growing amount of displacement because, frankly, we just don't need all those bank tellers. We have automated teller machines, or all those service station attendants because we have automated service stations.
How about all those coal miners?
And coal miners, too. When I was Secretary of Labor 20 years ago, I went down to the bottom of coal mines several times and was amazed even then to see that coal miners are high-tech workers. They're working on very complicated machines. They don't have pickaxes. They're actually working right on the brink of usually seams of coal that require a lot of reading of dials and meters and adjustments that these high-tech workers are making. And like every other kind of work in the United States, technology is making these workers more productive and at the same time reducing the number of workers who are necessary to do the job.
In the short term, President Trump, and he's not the only Republican who cheers for fossil fuel and for pipelines, say that, look, that's jobs, that's steel. We can do U.S. steel and we can get U.S. workers on the Dakota Access Pipeline, on the Keystone XL Pipeline, that's the point. Look, we're burning oil, we're selling oil, we might as well build the pipeline and get people to work wearing hard hats. What's wrong with that?
Well, I understand the argument. The trouble is once you build the pipeline, those jobs are finished. And the actual building of a pipeline, it may be a year, two, three, 4 years, there are many jobs associated with that kind of infrastructure. But then you have very few jobs in terms of maintaining the pipeline. What you need in today's economy are jobs that have a future. And these jobs, frankly, don't.
The president talks about massive infrastructure programs. Democrats want to flirt with that because they've always wanted to spend big government money on big jobs and manufacturing jobs that come along with infrastructure. But it seems to me that there's a real political imperative here, isn't there? I mean, both sides would love to tap that wellspring of middle-aged, mostly male, underemployed, angry voters and get them out there building roads and bridges. Is that really what this is about? And are people prepared to spend the kind of money, the kind of Rooseveltian FDR money that it's going to take to really get people back to work in this way?
The short answer is no. We do have a lot of what's called deferred maintenance on our roads, bridges, pipelines. I'm talking about sewers and water systems, our dikes and public transit systems. They are, in some cases, falling apart, literally falling apart, and we should be investing in them. They are the things that connect our workforce to work and to each other. And interest rates around the globe in terms of the availability of global capital are very low right now, and it would be the right time to do this. It would also create a lot of jobs. But it's hard to do it quickly. As we learned in 2008, 2009, you don't have that many shovel-ready programs that you can immediately get a lot of people into. And secondly, the way that Donald Trump and his administration have been talking about this infrastructure plan, it's going to be revenue neutral, using tax credits to lure private investors. That's probably not going to be stimulative in terms of creating a lot of additional demand for workers.
The White House website says 25 million jobs in a decade, according to the Bringing Back Jobs and Growth tab on whitehouse.gov. That's the Trump plan, or at least that's the Trump billboard before we see a plan. Does 25 million seem realistic to you?
I would say that it's on the optimistic side of realistic, that it's not completely out of the question. During Bill Clinton's administration, the United States created 22 million net new jobs, and that was over an eight-year period. And so the possibility of creating 25 million net new jobs over a 10-year period is not out of the question. It is unlikely, though, given that population growth is slowing, given that productivity growth is slowing, given that we have a lot of technological displacement. I mean, just think about the possibility of the self-driving car or truck. There are 4.5 million Americans in commercial driving jobs right now. And if that happens, you get self-driving cars and trucks. Well, those people are going to have to find other work.
So if Donald Trump called you in to help the president set policy in a way that might be politically passable for him, what would you tell the president, Mr. Secretary?
Well, I'd tell him if he called me, and I let me make it very clear, I'm available. I'm available anytime, any hour. If he called me, I'd say there are two separate problems, and you have to address both. One is the number of jobs, particularly for those who are too discouraged to look for work. And that is mostly a regional problem, and you need to diversify certain regional economies and get industries in there, like new green technologies, for example. The second problem is a problem of stagnant wages. It's not just the number of jobs, it's the quality of the jobs. Most jobs today pay, if you adjust for inflation, just a little bit more than they paid in the year 2000. And so we've got a lot of underlying economic insecurity that comes from stagnant wages, and also from an economy that's generating more contract jobs, jobs that don't have any necessary future attached to them because the jobs are just as long as the contract endures. So I would say, Mr. President, you've got to really take a look at job quality. You also, Mr. President, ought to be investing more and better in education, K through 12, but also community colleges and technical education. Look at Germany. They have precision manufacturing competitiveness and a lot of jobs in precision manufacturing and in high technology that don't require a college degree. So, Mr. President, I would definitely invest more in technical and community college education.
That's Todd Zwillick in conversation with Robert Reich.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.